So the question for our teacher is, what is the difference between her teaching and other Buddhist teaching in Thailand?
I think that not only Thailand, it depends on the understanding, because one teaches as one knows.
I'm sorry.
She's saying that a teacher explains the Dhamma according to that person's understanding of the Dhamma.
You think that the teachings are different or the teachers are different?
The teachings are different.
By the different teachers?
Yes.
But the truth is the truth.
Yes.
It depends on understanding.
Yes. Mm. But the question is, how is your teaching different?
Mary?
Yes.
Only me?
Yes.
According to my understanding, everyone speaks as they understand, I think. If one understands this, one just speaks about this.
Yes.
Yeah. And I would like to say, what is the difference?
Well, the answer that we got from Sukim was that other teachers' teaching has the self in it, because the Buddhist students want nirvana, want better afterlife. So there's still this concept of self in it. There's still a seeking for the self.
Because they don't really understand what reality is.
Right.
Yeah.
So the main point that Ajahn's saying is that actually there's only one true teaching. There's only the truth as taught by the Buddha. But because of what we were discussing this morning, ignorance in particular, and not understanding, then it's not easy to understand. So when people teach, they teach according to their understanding. So whether it's a lot of understanding or little understanding or wrong understanding, that's what's taught. So it's not actually that there are different teachings. There is only one set of truths about what is life, as taught by the Buddha, but people teach according to their understanding or misunderstanding. So when one hears different teachings, the test is what can be proved to be right now. Is it true that there is seeing now and that there is no self to be found that can see? So this is the test. So if someone else says, you can focus and be aware of what you're focusing on, is it possible for you or I or anyone to do this or to make any reality to appear? So the test is always back to this moment.
And I think you're wondering about specifics, what particular things are different, right? But in order to answer that, one would have to know what the other people teach, and we are not necessarily familiar with what exactly they do teach. However, to generalize a little bit, most other teachers that I'm aware of teach a particular practice. That is, there are steps to be undertaken, things to be done, that will lead to the arising of understanding. Whereas our reading of the Buddha's teaching is that understanding is a mental factor that arises just by conditions. There's no practice that enables one to understand what is real about the present moment. Either one understands or one doesn't. And the Buddha said repeatedly that the factor that breaks the cycle of ignorance and wrong view is hearing the truth about the way things are. If one hasn't heard the teaching, the explanation of reality at the present moment, there's no way there can be understanding of the present moment, because it's so deep and subtle that only a Buddha can discover it for himself. His teaching was an explanation of the reality of the present moment, not a direction of things to do or steps to be taken. So he explained the way it is, and he said that those who have sufficient developed understanding already will be able to appreciate that and develop further understanding if they consider what they hear.
And this also relates to what we were discussing at lunchtime, Florence, about how it's not a matter of doing anything or observing anything or trying to be anything or trying to be in the moment, for example, because all those ideas are with an idea of I or someone who can do something or follow steps or be here or not be here. So it's not about doing anything, but it's about understanding right at this moment. So it's the same point. But because it's very appealing to be told to do something, to take certain steps or focus on a certain object or to look for a shortcut, so this is very appealing. But to actually understand that at this moment, seeing now, hearing now, are just dhammas that arise by conditions, not by anyone's will or control, is not easy. It's subtle, because it's not about I at all.
And what about once we understand better the realities, eventually, if we want to help, you know, or some being more active, but something positive, I mean, like helping poor people or doing something. So, is it a I or is it, what is it then? What about decision and what about action? Is it clear?
What is the best way to help another person? What would be the best way to help any other person?
This is my question.
Yes. So what is the most important thing in life?
But I would say to live life, no? I don't know. I don't know yet.
But understanding is important. If one helps other people in whatever way one sees as being useful for the other person.
Can you say it again? Sorry.
Yes. One helps other people in whatever way one perceives to be useful for the other person, depending on one's idea of what will help more.
For example, at moments of generosity, it's wholesome. We mentioned this morning about wholesome and unwholesome cheetahs. So at moments of generosity, it's wholesome. Another new word is kusala. Kusala means wholesome. So these are kusala cheetahs, wholesome cheetahs at moments of generosity, at moments of showing consideration or respect. These are kusala cheetahs, wholesome moments. And the greatest kind of wholesomeness or kusala is understanding. So when there is understanding, actually it understands more about what is kusala, wholesome, and what is the opposite, akusala, unwholesome. And that understanding actually leads to more kinds of, all kinds of wholesomeness, more kindness, more consideration, more generosity through understanding. So actually, understanding is the key to the development of all kinds of goodness or wholesomeness, but most precious of all is understanding right now, understanding that there is no self, giving up the idea of self. But at moments of being compassionate or looking after other people, it can be with understanding also, any time, any place. So it's not a matter of stopping life or not doing one's work or not doing usual goodness, but understanding however one's life goes.
And to put what Sarah is saying in a different perspective, is that as of now, there's more unwholesome tendencies than wholesome tendencies. Ignorance, and ignorance is the root of all unwholesome actions, all unwholesome moments of consciousness. Ignorance is at the root. So right now, all day, we're driven by ignorance and attachment. And the person we love most is ourselves. So whatever we do is aimed at our own happiness, most of it, except a very sporadic moments, little moments in a day where there's genuine moments of giving and kindness. There might be, or there may not. But the thing is that we don't know because there's no understanding. And as understanding develops, we know to know what real giving is, what real kindness is. Because without knowing, we tend to take what is unwholesome, attachment for kindness, for example. So as understanding grows, it supports the good, all kinds of good, as Sarah was just saying. And when that happens, there's no idea about wanting to do good or worrying about not being able to do good things, because as you grow in understanding, you see there's nothing better than understanding, and you see that other goods are also enhanced. So when the conditions are right, understanding arises and other wholesome qualities will arise. If you're going on the right path, then it can only lead to more and more good.
And to answer your question more directly, could also be mentioned that taking opportunities for helping others as they arise in a day is likely to be more wholesome. There's bound to be idea of self and so forth from time to time, but opportunities to help other people that arise in a day is different from planning to be more active in doing wholesome deeds. That's like a big set number. Whereas wholesomeness that arises from time to time spontaneously may be purer than the other kind.
The different moments of consciousness arise and fall away so very fast. And when we are helping others, there are so many moments which are not wholesome in between that we don't know, that we are ignorant of, like liking ourselves, being such a good person, or being attached to the person we help. So many moments. So the more understanding is being developed, the more it is seen that there are many more unwholesome moments that we did not know of before. But it should not discourage us, because it's better to know than not to know, and understanding has to grow in that way.
What Nina's trying to show, that when there's the understanding about the value of understanding, of developing understanding, then you don't think about anything else to be more valuable. You don't worry about other things, because understanding will take care. And it's understanding, like right now, even when you're, whatever you're doing, you're going to help, when you're going to help somebody, even at that moment, what's most valuable? It's understanding. So anytime, it's understanding that's the most valuable. Once you see that, then you don't think, worry about anything else. Good will take care of itself. Even this question about whether or not there's going to be more wholesome in a day doesn't arise, because the most dangerous, dangerous unwholesome tendency is ignorance. So, and understanding is the only cure for that.
And you also mentioned about making decision, right? So to you, making decision is done by someone, by you, or by Dhamma?
I think that's a good question. I don't know.
Maybe our teachers can help.
Sorry.
Just at the end of the session this morning, we were talking a little bit about chetasikas, mental factors that arise with chetas. And we were mentioning one chetasika is attachment, another is ignorance, another is understanding, and there is one which is, we can translate as intention. And actually, even now, at each moment, this mental factor arises that coordinates the other cheetah seekers and the cheetah it arises with, and at moments when the cheetah is wholesome, kusala, or unwholesome, it wills or it intends it in a wholesome or an unwholesome way. So learning about these different cheetah seekers, not just to memorize, but just to begin to appreciate that what we consider to be I who can make decisions or have particular intentions or to decide whether to go left or right actually is performed by different cheetahs and cheetah seekers, not any I who can decide anything. Just like I can't decide to see or to see what at this moment, I can't decide whether to go this way or that way. Actually, it's various cheetahs and cheetah seekers, moments of thinking with cheetah seekers such as this one that decides at each moment what will be said or done or thought. No one who does anything at all. So we may think in life, I need to make a big decision. Shall I move to another place, or shall I stay in Hoi An? Shall I come to Taiwan, or should I stay at home? It seems like it's I who has to make all these decisions, but actually each moment of thinking is conditioned. Like now, thinking about whether to reach for the microphone or not, it just depends on thinking at this moment. Maybe we reach, but then we don't speak at all. So each moment of thinking, each moment of intending, each moment of decision is conditioned, not I to be found anywhere at all. Just like memory, we talked briefly about how at each moment there is memory marking and remembering the object. Sometimes we can't remember what we would like to remember, but still, even then, there is remembering. It's just not the object that we're attached to remembering, like if we can't remember where we put our door key. Actually, there is still remembering, but just not of that particular idea that we have in mind. So all these different realities, these cheetahs, these different mental factors, each one is conditioned. And it helps a lot, because why be so anguished about should I do this or should I do that, when actually even that thinking is conditioned at that moment. So each thinking, each decision, each moment is conditioned.
I mean, not that, I mean, I'm anywhere close to that level, zillions of lifetimes away, but I would say that even if you were just bitten by a poisonous snake, what's most valuable at that moment is understanding. Yet, of course, you can't stop the thinking and trying to do this, that will happen, but still the most valuable reality is understanding.
Just to follow up on the question of the nature of decision. Decision is not acting. We often mistake the one for the other, but they are different moments.
What Sarah said is a good reminder when we are wondering, shall I travel or shall I not travel? I have the same, I don't know, shall I go to India, shall I go to Thailand? And then I forget it's conditioned, it's not me who are thinking or wanting to do this or that. So there are choices to be made, but not by myself. But this is a good reminder, really.
And also, I think regardless the level of understanding, whether you never heard about realities or you understand a little bit about realities, it's just the same. There's making decision. And it's not done by anyone. It's not that there's a difference between before hearing about the Dhamma and after hearing about the Dhamma. Whether before there's someone who takes decision and after understanding about the Dhamma, there's no one who makes any decision anymore, because anyway there's no one. Things just happen. But maybe before there are more making decisions by conditioned by ignorance and unwholesomeness. And after hearing about the Dhamma, a little bit, not maybe not much difference, but just a little bit more conditions for making the decisions based on understanding or other kinds of wholesomeness. But the main point is there's no difference, just the same, before or after hearing the Dhamma.
Yes, someone with some understanding, if he has to go to the doctor, he'll go to the doctor. He made the decision to, just as someone who wouldn't go. There's nothing, no difference in that decision to make to go to the doctor. But someone with understanding may have moments of understanding the reality of the moment.
That's the point. It's not that life changes. It's not like one lives in a different place or life is any different from before. Still seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking as usual while doing one's job or coming here or not going here. But with more understanding, one knows it's not self. So when it seems I've got to make this big decision, there can be appreciation. It's just thinking with aversion, thinking with worry, thinking with attachment, just conditioned dhammas. Maybe now one may decide, yes, I'll go, and tomorrow it'd be, no, I won't go. Or one may decide to go, and like our Vietnamese friend, the visa isn't, he cannot go anyway. We don't know what will happen in life, but actually each moment of thinking is conditioned. Otherwise, it's always about I and my decision and my importance. But actually, there isn't any I, there isn't any self-importance. There are just these different dhammas.
Yeah, just now we are discussing all this, and it is good that we are reminded of the truth, because we are so forgetful in daily life. We can hear now, but at those moments we are forgetful that it is not the self but only conditioned reality. But that is why we have to hear so often the Dhamma explained, which is so useful to discuss life like we do now.
Because as we said this morning, usually we're just lost in that whole long story about whether I should go to India or come here and this and that. And just we forget completely about what is real, about Dhamma now. I have an example for Cindy about different ideas, like we were just talking about how there can be friendliness or consideration even now. And if there's more understanding, it'll be clearer what is friendliness and what is attachment or expectation of a result, for example. Some people may think that in order to develop kindness or friendliness, we have a word metta, which means kindness or friendliness. They think they should sit in a room and sit quietly and just focus on developing more kindness for other people. But what about now? This was Jonathan's point. Now that there are people around, if there's no consideration or no friendliness now, what's the point of waiting for another time or another occasion and trying to focus on having more kindness? Actually, it's because one would like to be a kinder person, so one would like to have more kindness. And that is different from being concerned for the other's welfare and being considerate when the opportunity arises. But without any understanding of moments of true kindness, then, as Nina said, we're bound to take all those moments of attachment, because it's my friend or my family member that one is being kind to, we're bound to take it for being kusala or wholesome. So understanding is essential in order to really be truthful or honest about when it is wholesome, when it is kusala, and when it isn't.
And we also have opportunity for wholesome moments when we appreciate the kindness of other people who are helping, like people are helping me when I'm walking, and I can appreciate, or Jonathan opening the door, and I said, "Scusa la città," and he said, "No." I don't know why.
Not necessarily.
Who knows?
Cannot tell.
So, if one always remember to be in the understanding, then one has no problem.
Cindy, it's not so much one making the effort to understand or to have understanding or to say, oh, understanding shall arise, because that's still doing it with the idea that a self is behind that decision. So even anything that enters your mind, you have no control. There's no one to control what thought enters your mind. So we can make these resolutions and say, oh, from now on, I'm going to think more about other people. But it doesn't happen, because it depends on the thoughts, depends on the conditions of what thoughts will arise in the mind. And there's only these very rare moments when, with complete understanding, there can be a determination. Of course, this depends on certain jetasikas arising. There would be a determination to do A, B, C, whatever it is. And it might happen. But not always. This is, for instance, a Buddha, or somebody who's a Buddha to be, can make in many lifetimes previously the decision that in the future he wishes to be a Sammasambuddha, the highest level of Buddha. But this is a rare thing. For us, every day, there's no control of the thoughts that enter our minds.
I brought that up because Nina said she forgot. She was worried about this and that, what happened in her trip, and got a little bit anguish about it. So she said she forgot, and then she remembers. So to be you know, to have the understanding. So even, you know, such advanced
it
person
doesn't mean,
like Nina still have
it
the
doesn't
moments
mean that
where
if
she,
some understanding is developed,
yeah,
that it's going to happen every single time.
Yeah, so
there's
you
always
answer the question.
Setbacks. It depends on the conditions, whatever enters the mind.
Right.
Let's say today there's a moment of understanding. Next day, next few minutes, there's a moment of no understanding.
Right.
And another thought that may be akusala arises.
Okay.
So there's no control over that.
Yeah.
The only thing we can say is that the more understanding that arises, the more chance there are for conditions to have more gusala jetasikas, say, anchitas, arise, to have gusala behavior,
yes,
occur.
Thank you, thank you,
say.
Thank you.
What is understanding?
That's a good question. Understanding is seeing what's the truth.
Of what?
Of reality.
Yes, what reality?
What's reality?
Yeah.
What reality?
Is things... Situation arises, and it's not the self behind.
When it's not the self, what is it?
If there's no self, it's conditions.
It's just many things. Everything is conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
But what is understanding? Just one reality at a time, in order to really understand reality. If you don't talk about one reality at a time, it seems like we have the understanding of reality enough. But actually, when we talk about just one reality, then we know whether there is enough understanding of it. So what is the nature of the understanding itself? We talk about understanding, right? What is the nature of reality which understands? Is it real? Is understanding real?
I think understanding depends on each individual, so it cannot be real. For instance, my understanding can be wrong and has nothing to do with real.
Can understanding be wrong?
My understanding?
No, not you, not you, not your. But can... Yeah. Can understanding be wrong?
Maybe I don't understand the concept of understanding. But I think, yes.
But we are talking about just understanding itself. Is there understanding? Is it real? And what is it? Can it be wrong?
Yes.
Understanding cannot be wrong.
Make a distinction first. We have the word understanding qualified by right understanding and wrong understanding. What Acharan is referring to is right understanding. Can right understanding be wrong?
No.
Okay.
Right understanding cannot be wrong.
Yeah.
So
now we are talking about wrong understanding and right understanding. Is wrong understanding real? Is it a reality?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And is right understanding a reality?
Yes.
Are they different?
Well, one is real and one is... No, one is right and the other one is not right.
Completely different. At moment of right understanding...
For instance, interrupting you.
Yeah.
May I use the word wholesome and unwholesome? Wholesome understanding and unwholesome understanding. Yeah?
What do you mean by unwholesome understanding?
Well, I don't know, vicious understanding.
Wouldn't it be better to use misunderstanding for the unwholesome one? Because understanding understands. If it doesn't understand, then it misunderstands. So, understanding and misunderstanding.
See, the word wholesome and unwholesome qualifies many other realities. For example, giving, kindness, compassion, these are all wholesome.
And wisdom?
Wisdom, yes.
So based on wisdom, I have a right understanding.
Right. And unwholesome also, many are unwholesome.
Yes. Based on unwholesome greed, totally a wrong understanding.
Right. So when we're trying to make a distinction between right and different kinds of understanding, then we don't say wholesome or unwholesome. We're talking about something.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with the concepts.
You're right. So we know about right understanding, or we can just call that understanding, that, as you say, it's a mental factor, it's a chetasika, and it is wholesome. And when it arises, it understands what is real. It understands that seeing, or it understands hearing. If there is the idea that the cup exists, then at that moment it's wrong understanding. And as you say, it is unwholesome at that moment. It's a chetasika it arises with ignorance. There's no understanding at all because it's the wrong view at that moment. So it's a complete opposite. So when Ajahn was asking Cindy what understanding is, it's just a reality, it's not self, as she said, it's wholesome. And at that moment, it understands the nature of the truth about reality. So the reason we're talking about all these different realities, like seeing or hearing, thinking, what is seen, the visible object, the sound, is so that understanding can begin to develop, to understand what is true and what is right, as opposed to what is just an idea or a fantasy.
I think I got it.
There is seeing right now. What is right understanding about seeing, and what is wrong understanding about seeing?
Right understanding about seeing? So the right understanding of the concept of seeing.
There is seeing right now, and there is right understanding.
I don't know if I understand your question, but I might give you an example. Wrong understanding of seeing might be that the concept of seeing is defined by, I don't know, I see a cup, whereby I do not see a cup. I see an object, and only after I think, I see. So this saying, I see in a cup, is a wrong understanding. Correct?
What about I see? It's wrong, all right?
Sorry?
I see.
No, I don't see. Seeing, sorry.
You are
seeing
now seeing.
Yes,
okay.
I'm not seeing. I do not
think
so. Yeah,
but the seeing, when you say, I see, right or wrong?
I see. Well, this is quite complicated, quite tricky, I might say. No, it's seeing. The right term is seeing, not I see, because...
So, seeing cannot be you, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't belong to you. It arises and falls away.
Yeah.
It can not be anyone at all. But after understanding this, we still say, I see. But we can say with understanding, because we know that actually there's no I, but in order to understand who sees this person or that person, we use the word I see. So when someone says, I see, who knows how much understanding is there? Right? It depends on whether there is no understanding at all of seeing, or there is a little understanding, just very little. Like now you heard the word seeing, it's a reality, it's conditioned, it's now seeing, but it's only very superficial. It's not the moment of the direct and exact understanding of that which experience, that which appears. Right? So there are many levels of understanding. When one doesn't hear anything about seeing at all, one takes seeing for I from birth on and on. But after hearing that what is seeing, it's conditioned, it has to arise. If it does not arise, there will never be seeing at all in the world. So whenever there is seeing, it's conditioned, it arises, it falls away. So it's truth, no one knows until one just hear about it more and more and more and consider whatever is right is right. So at moment of understanding the true nature of whatever is real, that is right understanding. So is right understanding real?
Not talking about whether you have right understanding, or Nina, or anyone, but
yes,
when...
So it's a reality.
Yeah.
It's not you who understands.
Yeah.
So it's a Dhamma.
Yeah, it's a reality.
What type or what kind of Dhamma is it?
Oh,
we start from one word, Dhamma, and then two words. Dhamma, which arises but does not experience anything at all. Like hardness,
it's sound, the first.
Sound. It
yeah.
cannot experience, it cannot know anything, but it's real, and its nature is rupa. We call it just one simple word, rupa dhamma.
Rupa dhamma, okay.
Yeah. But if there is no reality which arises and experiences, nothing can appear at all. So what appears now, no one knows that it's because of that reality which is conditioned to arise and experience from moment of birth until death, arising and falling away all the time, unknowingly, like now, seeing is that reality which arises and experience, hearing is that which arises and experience sound, thinking arises conditioned to think of what which has been experienced before. So actually, no one, nothing at all. There are only realities. That's why we have another word, the absolute realities. No one can change, no one can do anything, because actually there's no one at all. When there is the moment of thinking and making decision, is it a reality or no reality at all?
The moment.
Making decision.
It's a reality.
What kind? That which experiences. Another word is nama. And there are many, many different dhammas. Nama, dhamma, that we learn to understand just one by one. For example, the chief of experiencing, seeing, it experienced that which is seen only, one at a time, before what is known as something there, or many people here. How many moments of seeing, and it just arises just one moment. Before seeing, there's no seeing. After seeing, there's no seeing. But there are many other, the reality which is nama, which experiences all the time. Even while one is in deep sleep, it's there. That which experience, because that is not death yet. So we learn to understand reality as ourself, little by little, and getting used to understand one by one. For example now, thinking is not seeing at all, but it follows seeing, it follows hearing, it follows smelling, it follows every moment of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. And it can arise without following the seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. So in a day, what appears in life is only the visual object, visible object, sound, smell, taste, different ones, and that the which is tangible object, hardness, softness at all, no one at all. And it is experienced by different kind of nama, reality, that which experiences. So now we know that there are dhammas which are rupa, cannot experience, and the nama which can experience. But there are two different kinds of nama which experiences. For example, do you remember what is now appearing? Do you remember what is there on the table? Do you know?
Can you recognize?
Yeah.
If I'm looking or if I'm not looking. After thinking, yes. If there are conditions, I can understand.
At moment of seeing, there is also the reality which marks the object which is seen. So after that, that can be the memory or remembrance of that which is seen later. Different realities from moment to moment, all gone completely, never to return at all. And this is what Buddha enlightened, the truth of every Dhamma as it is. Is that right or wrong understanding? Right or wrong?
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yes, right. Right.
Even right understanding is not you. It's only at moment of right understanding and it's gone. And then ignorance again until right understanding develop more and more and more. In order to condition the moment of the object appears well to right understanding as it is, another level of understanding based on intellectual understanding. So what Buddha enlightened and taught now, whatever appears has arisen and fallen away in split seconds, can be directly experienced but not by ignorance, but by the highly developed panya, right understanding. And the word for right understanding is panya.
P-A-N-N-A.
Yes, I know the
yeah.
word. No,
yeah, panya.
Spelled, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank
this
you.
Morning we had panya and moha, ignorance and
yes,
understanding.
Yes, I have all the concepts, the terms, I didn't learn them yet.
So no matter what you think about or talk about, there are different realities, different moments. It's like a reality.
Like?
To like, liking.
Yes.
What kind of reality?
Nama.
Right. There are two kinds of nama. The chief one is citta, and the rest are cetasikas. It's not the chief of experiencing, but it arises with cetasika. So, what is like?
Cetasika.
So altogether, there are 52 kinds of cetasikas, with many intensity. Very weak or very strong, not self at all, depending on conditions. Do you like this very much or just so and so?
What?
This.
There's no me to like. there no self, this is just
but
reality,
that,
they're just there.
Okay. In a moment, at least there are 7 jitasika arising, but usually more than that. The seeing, only the moment, the actual moment of seeing, there are 7 jitasikas, condition is arising. But other moment more than that, because altogether there are 52 jitasikas, not self. That's why we learn to understand the truth little by little. What is not real?
Florence or Elena can help.
But what is not real? It's me or I? No? Yeah.
Is table real?
No.
It's just an idea, right?
It's just
because
an idea.
What is touched is hardness. Yeah. So hardness is real. But table that is thought about.
It's something.
It's just an idea, a concept. So concepts are not real, they're just ideas.
Or we can.
Right?
Yeah.
Object.
What we think of as an object is the idea of an object.
Yes.
So the idea is not real.
The idea is not real, okay. Yes, I understand. The idea of an object is not real, yeah. Basically, I would call it perception. But it's not a right...
Well, yes, we are using real in a very particular sense here.
My vocabulary, sorry.
No? That's all right, but we are using real in a particular sense. We are using real in the sense of what can be directly experienced or known.
Mm-hmm.
So when there is seeing, as we said, the object of the seeing is the visible matter, not the idea of an object.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand. Seeing is real and the idea is not real. Okay, thank you.
So when you mention perception, so what do you mean by perception? Do you mean thinking or memory, or what do you mean by perception?
Memory isn't thinking?
So memory and thinking, so the thinking is real, like thinking about an object, the thinking is real, but the object, the idea, is not real. At the moment of thinking, there is memory, because there's memory at each moment. So the memory is real, it's a cetasika, and it experiences the same object that the citta, the thinking, thinks about. So the thinking is real, the memory is real, but the idea of a notebook
is not real.
Is not real.
Yes, I understand. Oh, thank you.
Is that which is not real a reality?
Sorry?
Is that which is not real a reality?
That
which is not real, is that which is not real a reality?
Is that which is not real a reality?
Yes.
If it's not real, for example, notebook, if it's not real, how can it be reality?
So at this moment, or because it does not have understanding, it's not real.
That which is not real doesn't have any characteristic to be known. But that which is real has its own particular characteristic which can be known through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, or mind. It has its characteristic. Actually, it has its function, its manifestation, and its proximate cause or conditions for its arising. For example now, what is seen, is it real? Yes, it's a reality. It's a Dhamma. What kind of Dhamma?
Nama Dhamma.
That which is seen, not the seeing.
Seen.
Not the seeing, but the object which is seen.
Oh, the object.
Which is seen.
It's an idea.
If there was no reality that was seen, could there be any idea about it? So what is seen, we can call it visible object, but that which is seen, is that a reality?
The seeing itself
is real, we've said that. And what about what is seen? We're not talking about the object, we're not talking about notebook or fruit on the table. That which is seen, is that a reality?
So seeing
is real. It's citta, it's real. The mental factors that arise with seeing, the chetasikas are real. What about that which is seen, the visible object? The object of seeing, is that real or not real?
It's not real because...
Well, ideas are the object of thinking. Ideas are the object of thinking. Thinking is different from seeing.
Yes, so
seeing has its own
case,
object.
No, it's not a reality.
No. When you say idea is not real, it's because ideas are the object of thinking.
Yes, because...
But seeing is not thinking. Seeing is another reality. So seeing experiences a different kind of object. No?
So you experience... Yes, you see something without knowing what. You're just like, I don't know, I feel. I see something, I don't know what. I just see something. Shade.
What about at this moment of touching, for example? Is what is touched real or is it not real?
It's not real.
Is there any...
This morning?
Is there any hard...
I listen more to your discussions now and...
Is there any hardness that is touched? Any hardness? Yes, you said this morning it was
hard. Yes.
So is that hardness real or is it just an idea? At the moment of touching it, is it real or is it just an idea?
At the moment of touching it, it's real.
At the moment of touching it, it's real. And then afterwards there's the thinking about
what
the hardness of the... Yes.
And it becomes
an idea. And so at the moment of hearing what is heard...
At that moment of hearing?
It
might be the same. At first you hear sounds and
afterwards the sound.
You...
So the sound is real.
Yes.
And then the thinking about the idea is not real, the idea. What about at the moment of seeing? Is what is seen at that moment of seeing, is it real or not real?
At the moment,
it's
real.
It's real. And then afterwards, the idea of this object or that object
is not real.
But what is,
it's already memory.
Exactly. But what is seen is real at that moment of seeing.
Yes, I understood. So at that moment, this was my question. Not a question. It was something sometimes bothering me more, sometimes bothering me less. How every moment of our life becomes memory just like this instantly. So it's just a consequence of memories, and we wait for so long for something to happen, and then it becomes a memory very soon, and just memories, accumulated memories, basically. Yeah.
So is memory real?
Yes.
Is it a Dhamma?
Yes.
Is it Nama Rupa?
No. Nama, it's Nama.
It's Nama?
I meant it's not Rupa.
What kind of Nama?
It's not the Chi, the, what's the term? The,
cheetah the or cheetah. Cheetah-seeker?
It's a cheetah. I'm not familiar with the terms. Yeah, they're written here, but I don't have
so
a definition.
Understanding is just beyond the words. It's not just hearing and understanding the word and remember and know the difference of the meaning of the word, but it's the understanding comes from considering. Yeah. So now again, please. Memory, is it real?
The memory of...
Maybe both?
What do you mean?
Can be citta and citta-seeker?
No, citta cannot be citta-seeker, and citta-seeker cannot be citta, citta cannot be rupa.
Because in memory, you remember what you
at moment of seeing.
And you remember the feeling, or the what you think when you touch?
At the moment of remembering, it's real. Afterwards, it becomes unreal. Right?
Can it become something else?
I think
it is
there's
real at this moment. Yes, I have the answer.
I think there's a bit of confusion between the moment of remembering and
the
what
memory.
Is remembered, because we think remembering the past, but memory also has the function of recognizing what is there now. So it's not just about the past at all. So every moment of memory performing its function of memorizing or remembering is real. And the object of the memory is not necessarily a reality. It's an idea. It's already a concept.
Like some people do.
Let's introduce another new term, because we were discussing this at lunchtime too. The difference between our ordinary conventional ideas of memory, or memory in psychology, for example, or what we're talking about now. The new word is sanya, S-A-N-N-A. And sanya is memory, but it's not the same as our conventional or usual idea of memory. Sanya is a chetasika, and it arises with every single chitta during life. So it marks and remembers the object that is experienced. So now there is memory or sanya, and it... Yes. So now there is memory, sanya, S-A-N-N-A, sanya. It's a chetasika, and
so
it
the sanya is the memory itself.
It's the memory, it's the reality. And at every moment of life, there is memory, there is sanya. Even actually when fast asleep, or even when forgetting one's key, or forgetting which way to turn, there is still memory, because there is still an object that is being experienced, that is marked and remembered, even if it's not the one we would like to remember. So memory never changes into something different. The sanya now can never change to be another sanya. At each moment of life, citta arises and falls away. And at each moment of life, sanya arises with the citta, marks and remembers what is experienced and falls away. And it's because of sanya that we think about the cup or the notebook or red or yellow or this plan or that plan. So because of sanya or memory, there is thinking in different ways. So different kinds of sanya, but it never changes to be something different.
So at each moment there is memory, there is marking and remembering the object. So Sanya is always real, but it can be memory of reality, like when it arises at a moment of seeing, it experiences the object of seeing, the visible object, which we agreed is real. At moment of thinking about India, there is memory, and at that moment it's the memory is real, but the idea India is not real. Just the beginning.
Just a reminder that when we talk about memory in terms of the Dhamma, it's a mental factor, a momentary mental factor that arises with each moment of consciousness. When we use the word memory in English, it has all sorts of connotations. It sometimes means consciousness, the remembering, and sometimes means the object of what is remembered. So it's easy to get slightly confused on this subject. We are referring here to just a momentary mental factor that marks each object that is experienced by consciousness, and also that enables that object to be recalled or recognized or recalled later.
So that's Sanya.
That's one of the aspects of Sanya, yes.
Ajahn mentioned there are 7 chetasikas that arise at a moment of seeing, and these 7 chetasikas or mental factors, we call them universal mental factors, universal chetasikas, because they are the chetasikas that arise at every moment in life, and one of the 7 is Sanya. Some chetasikas that we've been talking about, such as attachment, they don't arise at the moment of seeing, they just arise with the unwholesome chittas, the akusala chittas, which arise later. And some chetasikas we've been talking about, such as panya or understanding, they only arise with wholesome chittas, we could say. They don't arise at moments of seeing or hearing. But sanya is a chetasika that arises at every moment. So no matter whether, conventionally speaking, we're forgetful or have good memories or we're thinking about lunch or thinking about anything, there's memory at each moment, sanya, marking what is experienced.
Sanya is real, the memory itself is not real.
The sanya itself is real, but the idea, oh, the lovely lunch we ate, that the idea is not real. Yes, correct.
So even when we have ideas about remembering something or not remembering something, there is still sanya.
And does sanya experience an object?
Yes, for sure. Because we rely on our memories to identify something.
At moment
what we have learned in the past.
At moment of seeing, what sanya experience?
At the moment of seeing, no. At the moment of seeing, no.
Sanya?
No. At the moment of seeing, no, only...
Then how do you remember what is seen if there was no memory to remember?
Well, everything takes place in a moment. The moment of seeing is the moment of seeing. Afterwards, I have the sanya. So but maybe sanya exists, but it is operational at the moment of...
But seeing rises and falls away. So does visible object rise and fall away? So you're saying after seeing, then there is sanya?
No, sanya, at that moment sanya arises, but I think it's within you, of course.
But it's with seeing. Why do you say it's not with seeing? Together with seeing, why can't sanya arise together with seeing?
Because I understood that seeing is different.
It is.
We just discussed how 7 chetasikas arise together with seeing, and one of these is sanya. So sanya arises with every chitta. Seeing is chitta, hearing is chitta, thinking is chitta. So sanya arises with every chitta in life at every moment. So that means sanya arises with chitta
and it marks the object that seeing sees, the visible object. And sanya arises with the moments of thinking afterwards, which think about the object. So sanya arises at every moment.
So continuously?
Arises and falls away, arises and falls away at every moment, continuously.
Okay. So this every moment is...
sanya arising.
Okay, is combined with sanya.
So you can say sanya is combined with every citta that arises in life. So if a jhan asks you any time, is there sanya now? Is sanya arising with seeing? The answer is yes, 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 yes.
Yes, right. I was just dismembering the moment, so the moment of seeing afterwards.
So sanya arises with seeing. Sanya marks or remembers what?
Everything.
At moment of seeing only.
Sorry?
At moment of seeing, only moment of seeing, what does sanya remember, marks, or recognize?
The object.
What object?
Which is seen.
Pardon?
Which is seen.
Yes. That which is seen.
What?
The object which is seen.
Okay. Is there past sanya?
Sorry?
Is there any past sanya?
Past sanya? Past sanya, of course, if it arises. So we still have past, right?
Right.
We have the moment here, but it's still we still have the past.
This is just to understand reality a little better and deeper.
And based on the sanya, on the past sanya, we have the current sanya, right? Because this is based on our experiences in the past.
Good.
And based on the current sanya, there will be the
next
future sanya.
Yeah.
Right.
Future.
And this is one meaning of the word accumulate, which we sometimes talk about. We talk about the tendencies of liking and disliking accumulating. And that simply means that they arise and they fall away, but they have their effect, just like sanya accumulates and is not lost. Other tendencies also accumulate and are not lost. Wholesome and unwholesome tendencies accumulate, which is one reason why we're all so different and have different personalities.
Sorry? Well, pattern seem to, you know, be close to determined, right? But, you know, even now, whatever arises are not just conditioned by past but also what's been experienced. For example, for one moment I might react to somebody saying something, another moment I might not. So it's not like each time I'm going to react the same way.
Okay,
so it depends.
It's conditioned by many different conditions. Yeah, by many different conditions arising in that moment.
Yeah.
Does like or dislike arise with seeing?
Yes. Like or dislike?
Does it arise with seeing?
No, I think it arises afterwards based on sanya.
Okay.
Based on what?
Sanya.
And on the accumulated...
Not only based on sanya, but I think...
Based on previous liking and disliking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Based on accumulated...
And other factors.
Yeah.
So very gradually, we've talked a lot about dharmas being conditioned, not I can make any dharma arise, but dharmas arise by conditions, not by anyone's control. So we're gradually beginning to understand a little more about these different conditions. So the condition for seeing and hearing is different from the condition for liking and disliking. And we have said that each citta has to fall away for the next citta to arise. This is another kind of condition. This is one kind of condition. And the accumulated tendency or habit or pattern of liking or disliking, this is another condition. And the way that sanya conditions thinking, this is a condition.
So gradually, by understanding more about different causes or different conditions, it becomes clearer or firmer, the understanding about how each Dhamma arises now, not by anyone's control. Otherwise, if we just hear a little, it still seems, I make decisions, I can be kind, I must decide whether to go to India or not. But by learning a little bit more about different causes and different conditions, we can see why the Dhamma arising now, the Sanya now, the way of thinking now, can't be any other way. It has to be exactly this way because of all those past patterns, all those past Sanyas, remembering different objects. How could the thinking now be any different? It has to be exactly this way. And one condition that actually you and I just mentioned a little bit at the airport that you said you were interested to hear about is actually the cause of seeing or hearing now. We've said that for seeing to arise now, there must be that which is seen, the visible object, and there must be eye sense which it's impinged on. But actually there's another cause or condition which conditions the seeing to arise now. Do you know, remember what it is?
The existence of the object. So at that moment, the object exists.
There was something at the airport you said you were interested to hear about.
I cannot recall now.
Okay. Karma. Karma condition. So seeing now or hearing now are actually results of past karma. So we call them, they're dhammas which are result. They're different from the liking or disliking. The liking or disliking are cause or the patterns which are accumulating. So the cause for the condition for seeing or hearing now is different from the condition for that pattern of liking and disliking. Whether the seeing now sees a pleasant object or an unpleasant object, whether there's the touching of hardness and with pain at that moment, or whether there's the touching of something soft and there is pleasant feeling in that moment, it depends on karma in the past. So this is another condition. So actually you didn't know it, but you're learning a little bit more about karma and its result, because the seeing or the hearing is the result of karma.
So what is karma?
I don't know. I could define it simply, what goes around comes around.
It's better to know what is it from the very beginning before we can talk more about it.
Yeah.
So is it real? Is it real?
Yes.
Is it a Dhamma?
So if it's really, it should be a Dhamma. Or is it a condition?
Whatever is real is Dhamma.
Yes.
What kind of Dhamma is Gamma?
Gamma is a Rupa Dhamma.
Why do you say that? Sorry. Why do you say it's a Rupa Dhamma?
The Rupa Dhamma is the absolute, right?
No, the Rupa Dhamma is the Dhamma that does not experience an object.
It's a Rupa Dhamma.
So what would be an example of karma then?
Of?
An example of karma as a Rupa Dhamma.
Bad thought in the past.
A
bad thought.
Thought.
Yeah.
What about painful bodily feeling?
Painful bodily feeling.
Toothache, for example.
Can be experienced.
I'm just wondering if you're thinking of result, because results of karma are unpleasant experiences.
Or pleasant.
Or pleasant, quite right. Pleasant or unpleasant experiences through the senses. A lot of people refer to that as karma, but actually it's result of karma. So now let's think about the cause, which is what Ajahn is asking about. Karma is cause and not result.
Okay.
Before that, we have to talk about the... Actually, we mentioned it earlier, but we didn't use the word karma. We haven't actually mentioned this. So we talked about how at each moment in life, there is a reality which we can translate in English as intention. actually, to give the Pali term, it's chetana. Chetana is karma, and chetana arises with every single citta in life, like sanya does. So it's usually translated as intention. But when chetana arises at each moment, it coordinates the citta and citta seekers it arises with. And when it arises with wholesome or unwholesome citas, kusala or akusala citas, it wills them to perform in a wholesome or unwholesome way. And this is another karma that can bring result. But the reality of karma is chetana chetasika, or intention in English, and it arises at every moment in life. It's a very deep topic, like sanya.
Is there chetana now? Is there karma now?
Karma?
Yes, karma. Karma.
We've just said that chetana is karma, and chetana is one of the seven chetasikas that arises at every moment in life. Yes, like sanya, it arises at every moment. So Ajahn's question is there, we can call it chetana or we can call it karma. Is there chetana now?
Now? Yes, it's always. Yes.
Correct. So is there karma now?
Yes.
Yes, because it's chetana, it's the same. So at each moment there is chetana or karma.
Yes.
In deep sleep, is there chetana?
I would say yes.
Good. Whenever citta arises, there must be chetana chetasika. At least seven chetasikas arising. And there are only 10 kinds of citta, which are accompanied by only seven chetasikas. The other moment must be more than seven. You know, chetana, chetasika, arising with each moment. Sanya chetasika, two chetasikas, arising with each moment of citta.
Other
five.
At least. Five more.
Would you like to know?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, this morning we did just briefly mention one other. We mentioned how at a moment of seeing, there must be a chetasika that contacts the object in order for seeing to see the visible object. At a moment of thinking, there must be the contact of the idea in order for thinking to think about it. And this is another chetasika, pasa, P-H-A-S-S-A, pasa. So pasa is also a universal chetasika that arises with the citta and contacts the object for the citta to experience it. So the pasa contacts the visible object, so seeing sees that visible object. So in deep sleep, there is pasa arising with citta at each moment. So far, sanya, chetana, and pasa. That's three. Another four. Another one is one-pointedness. So why does the citta experience just one object? Why can't it experience many objects?
At one time, yes.
At any one time, citta can only experience one object. And this chetasika focuses on that one object. And it has a very difficult name. Ekagata. E-K-A-G-G-A-T-A. Ekagata. So it focuses. Sometimes it's called concentration. Sometimes people like to go to a meditation center because they say then they can concentrate. But actually, just like there is actually memory at each moment, in fact, there is concentration
or one pointedness at each moment because of this chetasika. So there's exactly. It arises with every citta and concentrates on the object just for that instant and then is gone. Is gone. So far, Sanya, Chaitana, Pasa, Ekagata. We have four?
Five.
Have we five? Sanya, Chaitana, Pasa, Ekagata. What else?
Feeling.
We haven't mentioned feeling yet.
No.
Only four so far. Yeah. And then Nina's just mentioning feeling, another one, Vedana. Would you like to talk about feeling, Nina?
There is feeling, there's each kind of citta or consciousness. It can be pleasant or happy feeling or unhappy feeling or indifferent feeling. Even when you think there is no feeling now, there is still feeling, but it is indifferent feeling. But it is difficult to know it, but it is good to understand what the Buddha taught, that there is also indifferent feeling. And then when we think of bodily feeling, it means what is conditioned by impact on the body sense, that can be a painful feeling or a feeling of ease or pleasantness when there is a cool breeze here through body sense. It is a feeling of ease, a pleasant feeling through body sense. So when we think of mental feeling and bodily feeling is still mental. But then we can say there are five feelings. But it can be classified in many, many more ways. Anyway, each moment there is feeling, although we cannot know all of these.
The next chetasika.
So we have now Sanya, Pasa, or... Excuse me?
She's running through the Sanya, Chetana.
Pasa,
Ekagata,
or one pointedness,
and
feeling.
That's
so that is five. Jivi Tendriya, that is very difficult to explain. It is the faculty of life, really, that citta can go on, that there is still citta. And then there is called faculty of life, life faculty.
Life?
Yeah. And then there is manasikara, or attention. It can be translated by attention. That is also with each citta, attention to an object. It all has to do with... They are really helping citta to experience an object, but each in their own way, but they all experience the same object. They arise at the same physical base at the same time, and then they fall away at the same time. So it's good to know that there is only one citta at the moment, but several chetasikas, and there are many more, but these seven have to arise at each moment. But when there is a wholesome citta, there are many more who have to assist the citta to experience the object in the wholesome way. And when there is an unwholesome citta, there are other mental factors which are unwholesome and assist citta to experience an object in the unwholesome way. But there is cittas with a result, like seeing, hearing, all the experience through the senses, through the five senses. As I mentioned, there are 10 types. Well, for each moment of seeing can be the result of kusala karma or of akusala karma. Then we call it kusala vipaka,
an akusala vipaka, but it doesn't mean that it is active or really doing something unwholesome, but just result. And cittas arise in processes, so there is not only seeing, which is result, there are several more which also experience visible object, each in their own way. After seeing, there are a few more cittas which are result, and then in each process there are either kusala or wholesome cittas which and akusala cittas, although we don't know it. It's so fast. And then after the object is experienced through a sense door, it's experienced through mind door. And also there, the cittas are always either wholesome or unwholesome cittas. And then there are processes which think about object. And you cannot think with neutral cittas about something. It always has to be wholesome or unwholesome. And this helps us to know that cittas are beyond control. And they all have their own conditions. And nobody can really do anything, as Ajahn often reminds us. They're all non-self. That's the meaning of non-self. But now we can realize how much ignorance there is, because we listen to the Buddha's teachings about all these different cittas and cetasikas. But no, we don't know it only in intellectual understanding, not yet through direct understanding. So even I'm doing this, or just seeing, and then already there is very often akusala, unwholesome citta, before we realize it. We don't even know. So that's so important to develop more understanding. Otherwise our whole life is spent mostly with unwholesomeness.
I'd like to include a few of the Vietnamese, like Chong and Lok. So, Lok, is it the right name? Lok, yeah. So, Lok, you've been hearing a little bit more than Cindy, but not so long. So, when you hear that there are seven cheetah seekers with cheetah, and when we discuss about the details, is this interesting? Is it useful to know, and if so, why?
It's useful to know because to know what is real is useful.
Okay. And what about in deep sleep? Is there life faculty? Is there attention? Is there focusing on the object in deep sleep?
Yes, I think.
Think or sure?
Think.
Think. And is there citta arising at each moment in deep sleep?
Yes.
And each citta has to be accompanied by how many citta seekers?
Seven.
So at each moment in deep sleep, those citta seekers must arise, or just you think they may arise?
Must arise,
because at each moment must arise. And why does it matter what kind of cheetah seekers arise in deep sleep, or whether they are real or not real? How is it helpful to know this? Because it's not, now we're not in deep sleep. Why do we learn this?
To understand the nature of reality.
Right, and to understand even at that time, just like now, there are just cheetahs and cheetah seekers arising, not in anyone's control. No one can determine what that cheetah is, because actually it's the result of past karma, that cheetah that arises at each moment in deep sleep, accompanied by many cheetah seekers.
Yes.
Yes. And what about now? Is there karma now?
Yes.
What is karma now?
Cheetah seeker.
What cheetah seeker?
Chitana.
Chaitana. So at the moment of seeing, is there karma?
Yeah.
Yeah, because chaitana arises with every cheetah. And can the chaitana that arises now with the moment of seeing bring any result?
Yeah, I think.
Really? So now there is seeing, What is the cause of seeing?
The cause of seeing?
Yes. What is the condition for seeing?
Eye
sense, yes. Yeah. What else?
The light.
The light or the visible object, yes.
Yeah.
And what about past karma?
Past karma.
So it's the result of past karma. So the reality which is the result, such as seeing, the one that is the result, can it cause results in future? For example, that seeing, can it cause more seeing in future?
No.
No, because it's result. And so the chaitana that arises with the seeing, it's also a result. It's also conditioned by the past karma as well.
Yeah.
What about at moments of liking, like just liking the colors or liking what is seen around? Is the chaitana, is the karma at those moments of liking?
Yeah.
Yeah. At those moments of liking, is that chaitana strong enough that it can bring a result later, like birth or seeing or hearing in future?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Actually, it has to accumulate. So if it's just common, ordinary liking like now, it's akusala, it's attachment, and chaitana is there, but it hasn't accumulated to the degree that it can bring a result in future. For example, if that liking is so much that when we pass the shop, we go in and take something that doesn't belong to us, then the liking, the attachment is very strong. Then it's strong enough, it can bring result in future. But the common liking now, chaitana is there, karma is there, but it's not of the degree that it can bring result yet. And what about if one's a bit annoyed with the fly now, or one's worrying about something? Is there chaitana at those moments of annoyance or worry?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Is it strong enough that it can bring a result?
No.
No. But if one's so angry that one swats the mosquito and it dies or something like this, then it's strong enough, it can bring a result. Yeah. So actually there's chaitana at each moment, but most chaitana is not of a degree or strength that it can bring results.
Yeah.
Is that a little clearer about karma?
Yeah, thank you.
So just beginning to understand a little bit about karma.
I had a question with regard about karma. My question was, I heard you say that chaitana must be strong enough in order to trigger karma.
Actually, chaitana is karma. But that it has to be strong enough that it is karma that can bring results.
And worrying isn't strong enough?
Worrying is just akusala chitta, akusala with akusala chitta seekers. But usually there's just worrying, but it's not of a degree that it can bring results. Mm-hmm. It's just the tendency, the habit, the pattern of worrying. So it's unwholesome, but it's not of a degree that karma with it, the chaitana with it, can bring results. But if it keeps accumulating and so it's strong enough, then it can be later.
Okay. For example, if it conditions harsh speech, because of worry one speaks harshly to another person, then it's conditioning action through speech rather than just being what we would call a mental thing. It's conditioning action, so it may be strong enough to bring result.
You don't harm other people then when you are just worrying about something in your life. But as John says, when it conditions a bad action, so body speech or mind or bad speech in a very strong degree, it depends on the strength of the akusala. So there are many levels and strengths of each of those mental factors or chitta-sikas, and that are influence in our life and bring different effects or results, or we accumulate them and they become stronger. It's very detailed. Many degrees of panya or understanding too, many degrees of ignorance, many degrees of attachment, just a slight attachment that you like a flower, you don't harm anyone else, but when it is stronger, it can be the akusala karma that brings a result later on. Even when it is a long time ago in a past life, it happened a long time ago, it can be even at many lives afterwards bring a result in the form of rebirth. Because human being is a happy rebirth, and birth as a dog, animal, it's unhappy rebirth. You can't develop any understanding then.
The question comes from my friend, my close friend. She asked me if nimitta is classifying. So, is it classified citta, cetasika? I mean, is it absolutely true or concept?
He's asking a difficult question about, this is another new word, nimitta, N-I-M-I-T-T-A. And actually, it is the sign of reality. I think Ajahn mentioned something this morning, was actually touching on it, but not using the word nimitta, like she was talking about realities arising and falling away very quickly, and a little bit like when one has a fire stick or a sparkler and waves it around and there is an after image. So the nimitta is like the after image or the sign of reality. So often people ask, is it reality or is it concept? And this is the question. Actually, it's the sign of reality. So it's not a concept. So many moments of seeing fall away now. The understanding cannot understand one moment of seeing at that moment when it arises, but its characteristic or its sign can be directly known. So it's actually it's the nimitta of reality that is known, and it is the arising and falling away of the nimitta of reality which is known by developed understanding.
Can you maybe exemplify this?
So in the beginning, we learn that whatever we're talking about is either reality or concept. So the confusion behind the question is, if we're talking about how either visible object is real, but the notebook is concept, what about when we talk about the sign of reality, the nimitta of reality? Actually, it is the sign or the image of a reality, a little bit like a shadow or a photocopy of a reality. So the photocopy is not the original. And as a lawyer, often the photocopy is not acceptable. But the characteristic or the nature or the details of that photocopy are exactly the same as the original, or the shadow, the image, is the same as the original. So it's the sign of the reality. So in fact, what is known is the nimitta of reality.
This morning, Ajahn referred to fire stick. You know the fire stick? Like you have a stick with fire at one end, and you turn it around and it looks like a continuous circle. I mean, everything that's we're thinking about right now, wouldn't be if that was not the nature of all realities, to rise and fall away so fast and create that after image. If it was just one reality and falling away completely without the after image, there wouldn't be recognition. Life wouldn't be as it is now. There wouldn't be recognition of your face or a chance face. It's because realities rise and that are after sign. She referred to her eyebrows. So it's because realities rise one after another so fast that it creates that sign where you can recognize that this is a fruit, this is a table. It's just the way realities are rising and falling away and creating, right, and causing that after image.
Often people may say, how can that one moment of seeing be known, or the one moment of hearing be known? Actually, it's not one moment of seeing or one moment that's of hearing that is known. Many, many moments of seeing arise and fall away. But what is left behind is the sign. So the sign is the nimitta. And because there is the sign of reality, that's the reason why there can be thinking about the idea or the impression about the reality.
So what is seen now? What is seen now?
What is seen? What does seen?
What is seen now? What is the object of seeing now? What is seen?
The object of seeing. Nimitta.
Right. That's why we learn to understand reality one by one until one knows what appears as it is in life, or nimittas. What is heard?
Well, nimittas or sin or term for hearing.
Nimitta of what?
Nimitta for hearing
of sound.
Or, yeah, of sound.
Nimitta of sound.
Is it a specific term for this or?
Also nimitta of hearing. All conditioned realities, be them nama or rupa, have nimitta.
Okay, nimitta is general. It's not strictly connected to seeing. It's general. Okay, yes.
Is there feeling now?
Feeling, of course.
Can it be object?
The feeling
of the citta which experience it.
Yes.
What is the feeling which can be known now?
I don't know what you mean by the question. What
there are five kinds of feeling, indifferent feeling, pleasant feeling, bodily, mentally.
All kinds of feeling.
Just one at a time, because feeling arises.
Okay.
And even so, feeling which is the object must be the nimitta of feeling.
It's not like we experience nimitta and then someone with a very high level, an enlightened person, experiences the reality. It's still nimitta. It's the understanding that is different. The one with right with very high developed understanding that just understands that it's just reality, one following the other. Whereas even it's for him, without nimitta, there wouldn't be recognition, there wouldn't be thinking. Nimitta has to be there.
Many people interested to know what part of the Abhidhamma that the nimitta is discussed. What part of the Abhidhamma? Yeah.
No. Where they can find the
yeah. Abhidhamma?
Yes. Which book? Visuddhimagga? Okay.
And I think that other part too, like rupa nimitta, of five khandhas are nimitta. Rupa nimitta, vedana nimitta, sanya nimitta, sankhara nimitta, and vinyana nimitta, even vinyana now.
In the suttas also? Okay. Yeah, like the sign of...
everything.
Yeah. I have a question back to the discussions about karma and the kind of karma that brings result. So you mentioned about harsh speech. So when there's a very high degree of worrying and we might say something very harsh to other people, then it conditions, it's a karma that might condition result later. But what about when you feel very angry, for example? You don't say anything harsh, but you might do something or you know, or even look at another person to make that person scared. So is it like similar to equivalent to heart speech?
When, as Nina mentioned, there's the intention to hurt or harm the other. So if one looks at the other in a way when there is the deliberate intention to hurt or harm them, even if it's just through that action or that look, but not through words, so then it's through the body. So it's through the body door, that when there's deliberate glaring with the eyes, for example.
If there's no intention, a condition for it must be the intention.
So there's intention at every moment in life, calm at every moment. But this is when there is that, sometimes when one's just annoyed or one's just worried, but there's no intention to harm anyone else. Mm-hmm. One doesn't harm or cause trouble for anyone else. But when there's a deliberate intention at that moment to harm, cause harm, like one's annoyed with the mosquito, but one's not harming it. But when one deliberately harms it, there's the intention to actually kill it, and there are other factors that have to be involved. So the intention is very important.
So if you hurt someone or something without intention,
then it's not that karma that can bring a result. Like if you step on an insect, an ant, but there's no intention to harm it,
okay,
then it's not killing or that can bring a result.
If you hurt someone, leaving accident, the accident does not trigger karma, I understand. But if you hurt someone, for instance, like a result of worrying too much, of some other unwhole, does that trigger karma?
So there are lots of supporting conditions, so it may not be of a degree that can bring a result, but it may support other kinds of karma that can bring a result. So lots of grey areas and supporting conditions to be of a degree that it can bring a result. There have to be very specific points, for example, like deliberately stepping on the ant. If the ant doesn't die, then it's not killing, and so it doesn't bring the result, but it can be partial karma that can support other kinds of karma that bring a result.
Or if you hurt someone by ignorance,
then it's not, it can still be hurting, it can still be harming. Like someone might have no idea that there's anything wrong with their harsh speech that harms another. They may not even realize that it's hurting
this
the other.
This is what I meant.
So ignorance is not any excuse or escape from karma. Yes.
Okay. And now
tomorrow we can talk about wholesome karma and its results.
Okay.
But we can talk about that tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. And at last I would like have a rather childish question. Is there any way to improve your karma or to escape karma or to improve past harmful actions in order to...
How about now understanding? Can understanding lead to more understanding, and can that bring results in future?
So yes? No?
The thing is, what's past, what's done is done.
What's done is done.
If it's cause for producing result and there are conditions for the result, it will happen. So even a Buddha got hurt because of past karma. It's not like now you create good karma, mm-hmm, the past deeds are somehow nullified. No.
Mm-hmm. They are not. I did something good.
And the most important point...
So it's not a balance. I'm doing this.
The most important thing is, and the hardest point to understand, is that actually it's not my good deeds and my bad deeds and my results. They're just different dharmas.
The realities.
Different realities.
Past realities.
And different realities that accumulate, different realities that can bring results, different realities which are results. Many factors involved.
So not worth worrying about.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Actually, before we end, I am interested about Cindy's question earlier. Cindy has a question about basically how do we know the discussion is right, our understanding is the right understanding, right? So I'm interested about what Cindy thinks now, or are you satisfied with the discussion on this topic?
Yes, absolutely.
Maybe you can just say a little bit more about why you said absolutely, or why this seems to be more about the truth compared to all the other things you've listened to.
Because this is a more direct understanding through our senses. It just resonates and makes more sense to me for the reality and the present moment.
And
Ajahn said, and they are now.
And they are now, yes.
Okay, that's today's discussion, first day in Taiwan trip. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.